Hey, I want to mention that you can come and see me today from 11 until 1 at The Deck Supply in the Northland in the Boardwalk Shops right there next to Brewtop across the street from Walmart, not too far off 29 and Berry Road. Today from 11 until 1 at The Deck Supply. Stop by and see me, and you can get a four-pack of tickets to go see the Kansas City Comets play playoff action coming up on Monday. First 25 people to stop and see me at the Deck Supply, 8610 North Boardwalk Avenue in the Northland. I'll hook you up with some tickets. Also register to win an autographed team ball from Sporting Kansas City. And we'll have lunch from Schlotsky's for you at the Deck Supply in the Northland today from 11 to 1. Let's say hello now to Jeff Penner. Jeff, how you been doing, man?
I'm doing good. I'm doing really good. And just listening to Stan Weber, because since I've been on with you last, I have a son graduating high school.
Oh.
He is going to K-State. Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, I feel old and excited also, because I'm now a K-State fan also, as well, in addition to the Wisconsin that I graduated from. So very exciting. I've been out there now a few times for some visits, and really, really great area. Really, and kind of odd, because I've grown up there my whole life, I've always known about K-State, but never really thought about it. It's always been KU, MU. Relatives have gone to both, but none to K-State. And now it's been out there. It's just incredible place out there. And a lot of people have graduated from there. A lot of people in our neighborhood have graduated from there. So excited to be part of K-State here coming up in the fall. So very, very exciting. And exciting to be with you guys. And all the teams are home. The Royals, Sporting, the Currents, they're all here over the weekend, and there's going to be, we'll get one thing out of the way quickly, no rain all weekend. Absolutely.
That's
not
what we're talking about.
Isn't that wonderful?
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And again, we want to thank our friends from The Deck Supply for bringing you this wonderful segment every Friday starting today. Now, that's great. I need a specific forecast. Excelsior Springs today at 3:30 for a high school track meet, if you please, and then just give us the rest of the weather for the weekend in Kansas City.
Perfect, Stephen. Yeah, it looks great. It's going to be around 60 to 65 today. There'll be some clouds around, not much wind, maybe 5 to 15 miles per hour, so really, really nice. The average high is 65, 66, so just slightly cooler than average. So great weather. And then tonight, heading out to the K, temperatures will be in the 50s there around the first pitch, and then dropping into the 40s, so a little cool, but not much wind and certainly no rain. And then you've got the Royals all weekend also. So tomorrow's going to be a little cooler in the 50s, near 60, clouds in and out of the area. And temperatures will be, as I said, in the 50s. And for the Sporting KC and KC current play tomorrow evening, and the Royals, all be generally in the 50s in the evening, dropping into the 40s during all those games, but not much wind. And then Sunday, back up to near 60 again, maybe even the low 60s. And again, partly cloudy with hardly, with just some light winds. And if there's going to be, as I said, no rain, there might be a sprinkle on Sunday or tomorrow afternoon, but it's not really going to cause any issues. It's going to be a great weekend. Any other questions for me?
No. Are you glad to be on the air with us every Friday? That's the only question I have.
Yes.
Oh, good.
It's exciting, yeah. It'll be great. Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you very much. We look forward to it, and we thank The Deck Supply for making it possible. Jeff, good to talk to you. Thank you for giving us the weather, and we'll talk to you next Friday about who the Chiefs took in the first round, all right?
Interesting. Thank you for having me, and have a great weekend, guys.
Jeff Penner, every Friday we'll give you the weekend forecast, and so we will And then moving forward, we'll have the forecast for down at the lake. We'll have the forecast for Wichita. You know what the forecast is for Wichita? It's great because you're listening to us right now. How about that? Back after this. Do we have to break? Oh, yeah, baby, because I get to go right to Dr. Vincent Key, who's sitting here. I've been waiting to have you on this show. I'm so excited to talk to you on the radio. Dr. Key, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thank you for coming in here. What can you say about my co-host here, Nate Bucati? Give me some wise words, please.
Yeah, he came in here. I looked at his leg, and I was like, yeah, you got broke. I know he's getting some good care. The boot is kind of cumbersome, sometimes you can't put all the weight on it you want, but eventually it'll heal. It'll be all right.
So he's not out for the year?
Nah, he's not out for a year. He's on the IR, so, maybe 8 weeks.
Designated to return, so we're very excited about that. No, I'm not. Just you always move on. Yeah. There you go. Okay, so Dr. Key, I want to give people... Most people know who you are, but if people don't, now how long have you been the head team physician for the Royals?
This is year 14.
Year 14. And you're associate professor of orthopedic surgery, sports medicine at the University of Kansas Health System. You've done it all. You graduated from Spring Hill High School. You went to K-State where you were a track and field star. I remember Stan was the color commentator. You worked for the arena football team, and I was the public address announcer. So we all were there together.
Way back.
We could spend an hour talking about your resume, but we also, you have a daughter that's a track star down at LSU. You have a son. Where's he?
He's at Campbell.
He's
North
at Campbell.
Carolina. Yeah.
And so you have an awesome family, and the first time we really met was when we were at a trivia night. I was invited to a Bishop Miege, and I was one of the experts they brought in. And you bid on me to be on your team to help with sports and entertainment. So I hope I was worth the money.
Oh, you were definitely worth the money.
You.
Yeah,
I rarely am, but that's fine.
Yeah, I will say I have my two, but I have my other two.
Right.
My oldest one coaches football at Miege.
Oh, wow.
And then my other son, Cameron. He played football at K-State, and now he's going to be a first-year medical student here at KU. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
How about that? Okay, so and we also talk from time to time because you did the surgery on my wife on her carpal tunnel and was awesome, and you've actually been taking care of my right shoulder and keeping me off the operating table for the last several years. So you're the best. You're awesome, man. And so I can't say enough good things about you. First-hand experience, Nate Bucati, all right? But you have heard us talking about the situation in Major League Baseball with this overwhelming number of injuries. And really, people are talking about because some of the top names in Major League Baseball have suffered elbow injuries recently. You had the statement from the MLBPA and Tony Clark that pointed the finger at the pitch clock. Major League Baseball said it's not the pitch clock. We're talking velocity. We're talking about other things other than the pitch clock. And then you heard me read some tweets from Pedro Martinez, which you did agree with. You said Pedro knows what he's talking about when it comes to pitching. And so you wanted to come on and just give us your opinion, your second opinion, and it's nice to have someone on the show that knows what they're talking about. And so when you hear all this, when you hear this debate about why are all these pitchers getting hurt now, why are all these elite pitchers getting hurt, what's your answer?
I think the biggest thing was, when Tony came out and said it's the pitch clock, I almost laughed. I mean, it's not the pitch clock. These injuries have been going on way before the pitch clock. And there's not, people talk about that there's a epidemic of this. And this has been coming for a long, long time. It starts, honestly, when the kids are little. As much baseball as they play, and it's just wear and tear on the arm, whether it be the shoulder or the elbow. And so, when we talk about them coming, whether or not they get to high school and then high school to college and college to pro, there's a lot of wear on these elbows, and we're getting more wear on these elbows coming into professional baseball than we did in the past, just because of volume and number of games. I think about it like this. You know, I'm from Kentucky originally. My granddad had the tobacco farm, you know, and I'm like, if you have a tire, if you're driving a car and you go from here to Topeka, well, the wear is less than driving from here to Los Angeles. And those are the things that you really have to take into account. It's just the wear and tear. We don't think about it because these kids are pitching. And then we talk about the epidemic. Well, just like my granddad used to say, if it was Joe Neckbone who was in single A ball that had these injuries, no one would say anything. But since it's Shane Bieber and the kid from Atlanta, and we saw with Shohei last year, then all of a sudden, oh my God, it's a problem. But this has been building for quite a while.
Like when Nate Neckbone over here hurts his leg.
Nobody cares.
Nobody cares about that. Right.
So one of the things that we hear about, I mean, like to use your analogy about the tread on the tire, if you drive your car as fast as you possibly can, slam on the brakes, take turns really tightly, and all that stuff, the tire is going to be even more stress on the tire than if you drive it at a medium pace, you know, right down the middle of the highway, right, and take the turns slowly. We hear so much about this emphasis on increased velocity and spin rate and the things that you're asking your arm to do. How much of that is part of this epidemic that we're talking about?
Huge, huge. Because everyone wants velocity, right?
Right.
And so with more velocity becomes more stress on the shoulder and the elbow, okay? And it just goes without saying. And it's funny, I think we're teaching these kids to be throwers, not necessarily pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Dave Island, who was one of our pitching coaches during the World Series run, used to say it all the time, is that that's what we're teaching these kids. And then they go to these different places and they have the 80-mile-an-hour club, the 90-mile-an-hour club, which to me is kind of crazy, right?
But those kids know if I can hit 96 on the gun, even if I'm not really a pitcher, somebody's going to draft me and give me a $2 million signing bonus because they think they can turn me into a pitcher.
Exactly. And so that's what they do, is that you could throw 97 and you're walking everybody, mm-hmm. but a kid throwing 88, striking out everybody, doesn't get a chance.
Yeah.
If you look at spin rate has to do with grip. Okay, and these kids are really choking the baseball and trying to get the spin, well, what happens with that is that they put more pressure on the muscle that overlies the ligament. So you're gripping, and it's just more fatigue for that muscle. Well, then, if you don't have the muscle as a check rein for that ligament, and then on top of that, the ligament is worn from the amount of wear and tear that you're doing over time, then it really puts that ligament at risk.
And you also mentioned when I talked to you the spider tack that major league pitchers used to be able to use, and now they can't. That has an effect, too, because what's that causing them to do now?
Well, you know, if you had the spider tack, then you wouldn't have to grip the ball enough to create the spin.
Right.
You know, no one wants to use it. I mean, hopefully I don't get a call from Commissioner Manfred for this. You know, but you're right, is that now that they've outlawed that, then you have to go to really choke in the baseball.
So then if you're a parent out there and you've got a young pitcher that you're either coaching or that's playing a lot, what advice do you give them about handling? And look, not everyone's going to pitch D1. Not everyone's going to pitch in college. Hell, not everyone's going to pitch in high school. And so I think that's important to remember as well. But what advice would you give to maybe someone that's starting out with their son as a pitcher?
I think the biggest thing is not using them up for their talent. God gives them that talent, right? And I saw that with big guys, and I saw that even Yordano Ventura was the biggest one for me. I mean, he wasn't a very big guy. So not having a kid pitch, and then when he's not pitching, catch, because it's volume. Okay, who throws as much as a pitcher? A catcher. And so you have to monitor their volume. And for me, it really starts when they're like 12 or 13 years old, that these kids have to train to do the sport. You know, when they're 10 years old, they can just get out of bed and start throwing. But then you hit puberty, and then the forces on the shoulder and the elbow go up. So it's getting them to stretch every day. There's different stretches. Like in my office, I give them a packet of material that has stretches on there and strengthening. The one thing is, everyone's going to tell a kid to get stronger. That's what they tell them. Just get stronger. Just get stronger.
Yeah.
Well, you have to have both. You have to have the strength and you have to have the flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that they need to stretch every day. I tell them, you know, do you brush your teeth? Some of them say not every day. But the thing is that they got to stretch every day. Strengthening is every other day or 2 days in between. And so it's getting them to understand if they're going to play baseball most of the year, and I don't want them to. There's studies that have shown that kids that play baseball 8 months or more out of the year have a 5 times higher risk of injury than those who do not. Then they're going to have to do those stretches. They're going to have to do those exercises. Because we talk about when you go on the other side of this, when I'm doing Tommy John surgery, right? And I did, three this week. I did 3-4 last week, and I've got a couple to do this upcoming week, is that everyone's like, well, you throw better after you get Tommy John surgery. Well, it's not because I put a hemi in the elbow. I mean, I do a pretty good TJ. I mean, I got a 94% return to play rate and a success rate, and I do most of our TJs within the organization. But you have to have everything else working better. You have to have their shoulder working better, their shoulder blade. Most people don't know 1/3 of your shoulder motion comes from your shoulder blade. You have to have your core. You have to have your lower half to drive the baseball. So you have to have all of those things together, and the elbow is a victim of all those things not being right.
You know, it's... I've referenced this a few times on the air, but my wife is a physical therapist. And when we first started dating, I tore my ACL. And, you know, that was at about the time, that was 18 years ago now. That was at about the time when people were saying the same thing, like, oh, you can come back even stronger from your ACL replacement, you know, because they were starting to finally do it arthroscopically and all that stuff, right? And being married to Kelly, she was just graduating PT school, and we didn't have kids, so we had all kinds of time. And we would go to the gym, and she would take me through, you know, through different. We did a lot of therapy, and my knee came back better in a lot of ways than it had been before. But it was because of it wasn't because all of a sudden I had a better ligament. It was because the range of motion was better. She helped me strengthen every part of the muscles that go around my knee, and so like all of a sudden I was like, I should have been doing this on my healthy knees. Is that kind of what you're like? If you had trained your arm and elbow the way that you do post surgery, you would have a better performance than you do before surgery. It's not the surgery itself that makes you better as a pitcher. Is that what you're basically getting at?
That's most of it, right? I mean, yes. I mean, the ligament, you know, you're putting in a brand new piece of material, collagen there, but you do. You have to strengthen everything. And I think of it like this, too, is that you have a certain amount of clicks in your elbow.
Okay.
So every time you throw, I don't care. You know, pitch count is great, but no one takes into account the pitch count, the throws between innings, your pitching coach, kids playing catch. All of that stuff matters, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you only have so many clicks in your elbow. Now, if your kinetic chain isn't good, then every time you throw, it's not one click. It may be 2 or 3 clicks.
Mm.
And you only have so many clicks in that elbow before something happens. I know for me, like I said, I've been around this a long time. I've been practiced 21 years. And the one thing I got to see, I trained in Los Angeles. So Dr. Jobe, who actually invented the Tommy John, I was actually the last resident to work with him.
Wow.
And all the people that people hear about, Dr. Eletrage, who's there in Los Angeles, a lot of guys don't get him. He was my staff. I was just talking to Keith Meister a couple nights ago. He's my best friend in baseball. You know, he talks about these things. And Keith's the one that operated on Shane Bieber and all these guys. And he talks about it. It's an epidemic. He's doing 40 Tommy Johns this month alone.
Wow. Why don't... So you touched on something that is an epidemic in youth sports in general, and that is... You got to specialize and you got to play one sport all year round almost. You know, you talked about, you said kids that play baseball 8 months out of the year, 5 times higher rate for injury. Why are we doing this to kids?
Here's what I think, and this is just my opinion. Some of it is money-driven.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
Teaching these kids and coaching these kids and having these different places. There's a lot of money in youth baseball.
Yeah.
I think some of it, you guys know this.
Yeah.
And I went through it with my four kids, right?
Yeah.
And but they all played different sports. They just didn't play one sport. But the thing is that, and I think it's fear of parents too, is that they want their kid to get a scholarship. So they think the only way is to be able to just concentrate on one thing. But here's what I tell parents. If your kid's the truth, they're going to find you.
Yeah,
That's right.
We had Matt Strom, you know, I remember one of our former Royals players, Matt Strom. He's up in North Dakota somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, if
they found him.
They found him. I mean, they find kids. I just came from the Dominican, you know, doing physicals down there. There's kids all over the world. So if your kid's really the truth, they're going to find them. Some parents think about, well, I need my kid to get a scholarship. And in baseball, it's partial scholarships. Hey, some's better than none. But, you know, it's all these fears that the parents have. The kids, they see their friends doing one sport, and they want to be with their peers. So there's a lot of pressure out there.
So this is kind of a loaded question. We hear a lot about, for example, driveline, weighted balls, and different training methods now that they weren't available even 10, 20 years ago. What's your opinion on that?
Here's the thing about driveline. I don't think driveline is bad, but I think you're putting the cart before the horse. Meaning this, you have to get your body ready to endure that. Otherwise, once again, you're putting stress on the elbow. Weighted balls has gone through an evolution, right? At the beginning, we all said, oh, it's all bad. It's all bad. It does have some relevance, but it's only short-lived, meaning this. There's studies that have come out that show if you do away, and I'm not saying chucking it 40 feet. They do what's called back throws. They may be 3 feet against a wall. That it shows that it does increase what's called your layback, okay, which will increase your velocity. And you're throwing something heavy, and then you're throwing something light, you're going to get that arm whip. But it's short-lived. You're only going to be able to maximize that effect that day. Most people think you're going to be able to do that long term. You're not going to be able to do that long term. So if you want to do it before a game, that's reasonable. But if you think that you're going to do it and it's going to help you 5 days down the line, it's just not going to happen.
You know, Mike Boddicker gets accused of being a grumpy old pitcher, right? Who only talks about the way things used to be. But I mean, there's some of the things that you're saying that he has said over and over again, that young pitchers, the pitchers these days, worry too much about velocity and don't focus enough on their command and their feel for pitching. And that, and you're agreeing right now, right?
100%. Because here's the thing. Pitching, being able to spot your pitches is what we call a neuromuscular thing. It's a learned thing. You have to be able to do it consistently on a, you know, consistently hitting that pitch. You don't know where your velocity is going to be. One kid one summer will be 5'2", next summer he's 6'4". With that size, that velocity is going to come, more likely than not, but you're not going to be able to teach that command. That's a very precise thing that's learned over time. So if you teach a kid command early, then he grows up to be 6'4". Now he has velocity. To me, that's when you have a monster on the mound.
Do you see anything happening to change the path we're going down? Are they going to start, you know, encouraging guys to pitch more and de-emphasize velocity? Or are we going down a path we can't turn around now?
I think we can to some degree. I mean, but again, it's philosophy because you get scouts that think this. You get recruiters that think this. And it's hard to unlearn those things. And then it gets ingrained. And like you said, and it gets filtered down. And then everyone starts believing it. You know, I get a lot of stuff like that. I get, you know, one of my at times my pet peeve, maybe not. But, you know, I get, you know, a kid coming in with a shoulder problem. And the first thing that everyone wants is an MRI. And he's had no history of trauma, nothing. He just has shoulder pain. and I know what I'm going to see on that MRI. Okay, there's what's called a slap tear, a labral tear in the shoulder. And people have to understand most of the time, that's what we call physiologic. It's not pathologic. Because to be able to get layback, you have to be able to peel the labrum off the socket a little bit. And so what happens is they blame the pain on that tear. Next thing you know, the kid's having surgery, and he can never throw again because now you've constrained the shoulder. Okay? Now you can't, you've lost that layback, right? Just like in the elbow. No history of trauma. You know, they have elbow pain. Most kids, and here's the other thing about shoulders and kids too. Rotator cuff tears don't occur in kids most of the time. I mean, they can get some scuffing of the cuff and things of that nature, but they really don't happen. I tell parents, I say, if you see a full thickness rotator cuff tear in a 14-year-old, please call me and we'll write it up in the journal. But in the elbow, same thing. These kids have pain in the back part of their elbow. They call it triceps tendonitis. It's not triceps tendonitis. It's just that they have what's called valgus extension overload, where they're getting a little bit of a bone bruise when they're trying to release the ball. And then next thing they know, everyone wants an MRI. And you don't need it. I tell parents, please save your money. You know, a lot of time. And
MRIs are expensive.
Yeah, just please save your money. I don't need an MRI to make that diagnosis.
By the way, Jamie Bloom and Mike Boddick are texting and loving this segment right now.
I mean, they're going to love me saying this part, too. I feel like the analytics community has something to do with this because they have found strikeouts matter, and that strikeouts happen more often when you get great spin rate and when you get great velocity. So that's the part of the reason they're all this emphasis. But are they calculating at all the downside risk of your pitch? What about the downside risk that you might lose your pitcher for the year?
Right. They're not looking at that. I mean, there's a cost to everything. All right, so, and there's some people on the bell-shaped curve that may be able to do it and be okay, you know, but that's a rainbow unicorn over there. Everyone else on the hump, you know, it's probably something is going to happen. So it's a balance. And I tell these kids, like, when they're going into baseball, you know, their tryouts are the first week in March. A pitcher should be starting to get ready for their tryouts January 1st. If it's a position player, usually it's second or third week in January, to give their soft tissue enough time to be able to get pliable enough for them to be able to do their activity. So the thing is that then they get into situations where they try to cram everything in to 2 weeks, and then their shoulder and elbow start hurting. Then you have to shut it. Then I have to shut them down, and I'm looking like the bad guy. But I tell them, if you would have been doing this stuff earlier, that it would help. I know at Bishop Miege, Coach Mira there, I instituted kind of a program there for them during the winter, and he took his pitchers and his catchers and did this kinetic chain program that I have. And that season, they had no shoulder elbow issues the entire season. You know, I have great therapists, Kyle Veazey, Johnny over at our Sports Performance Center. I have the two best baseball therapists in the city at my disposal. But I don't want to overwork them with stuff that kids could be doing on their own. You know, eventually kids got to own it. I'm giving a lecture this afternoon talking about this very thing. The kids just have to own it.
Do you have a stretching program for sports talk show hosts, by any chance?
I got you. I got you.
Well, you see, we're injured more than baseball players. I can tell you that, and we just sit and talk.
We need some kinetic chain work.
So one thing, and we're wrapped. Thank you for being so generous with your time.
I could be here all day.
We can talk to you all day.
I could be here all day.
I need you on my podcast. We can just talk for 2 hours. Yeah. But I do want to ask you about something a little bit off topic, because you mentioned his name earlier. You're Yordano Ventura. One of my favorite Royals players of all time, and I know you were close with him. And like you said, you look at him, you think, well, this kid can't be a stud starting pitcher throwing 100, and he was a unicorn, right? I mean, he would have been, I mean, where he, it's, what are the, you tell me.
I kind of get choked up in talking about him because I was with him the day before he died. I was in the Dominican, and I remember my son Cameron was there, and he was sitting there in a hammock. And I asked Cameron, I said, do you want your Donald to throw batting practice to you? He was like, no, no, no chance. And the one thing about Yo is that I think God put me there because at least I got to tell him I loved him before I left. I gave him a hug and I told him I loved him. And when I found out he passed, it was really, really hard. Really hard. I still, in my lectures, I have a picture of myself and Giordano 2 days before he passed. I put it in my lecture, actually, to this day. He was special. I mean, special. I mean, that's all you could say. God made him 100%.
And he just scratched the surface, too.
Oh, like, yeah.
I mean, he was what he was going to be.
Oh. I mean, you heard the ball. I mean, it was just a different sound. It was hitting the catcher's glove. It was just a whole different sound than anything that I had seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing that. You're awesome. I'm glad to call you a friend, and hopefully we can have you on again. We didn't ruin this by, you know.
Oh, no, all day, good. Every day.
Okay.
All day, every day.
But we got to do a podcast.
The feedback has been unbelievable. I mean, I have guys, Scott Carroll texts me. I know a scout who listens to the show, Jeff Cornell, who's buddies with Bluma. He's listening. Like, people that are in the industry are listening to this, and they couldn't co-sign what you're saying more. You are spot on.
So we're going to be calling you back, unfortunately. So you got to deal with us again.
That's
the point.
All right.
That's the point.
I'll do it.
By the way, my wife just texted me, who is this doc? He is great.
That's Dr. Vincent Key.
Dr. Vincent Key, honey.
Head team physician for the Kansas City Royals. His 14th year. And again, we'll just leave this. If there's one message you want people to take away from this, from your appearance, young pitchers, parents out there, what is it?
It's prepare. You have to prepare to do the activity now. I think that's the biggest thing. And parents, you know, your kids are talented, but, you know, let them have the game. Let them have the game. They're going to get there if it's God's will and what they want to do. I think the key is really preparing. Kids got to own it. They got to do their stretches. They have to do their kinetic chain work. And if they do those things, the chances of them being in my office go way, 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 way down. It's not zero because things happen. I mean, I put screws in kids' elbows. I put one not too long ago, a couple days ago. Things happen. But if they prepare, I think longevity will be key for them.
And for some reason, the chances of me appearing in your office continue to skyrocket. And I don't play any sports, but that's fine. Doc, it's always good to see you, my man.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Hopefully we'll talk to you soon. That's Dr. Vincent Key back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the show. Thank you to Dr. Vincent Key for spending about half an hour with us or so. That segment will be podcast at 810WHB.com. If you want to listen to that, or if you want to share that with someone that I'm sure that somebody maybe in your life, like, man, I wish that person would have heard this or this person because it was really good. It'll be podcast later today. Now let's talk to former Royals catcher Mike McFarland. What's up, Mac? How you doing?
Dr. Keyes doesn't sugarcoat it.
No.
He knows he's done a billion arms, that's for sure.
That's the truth. And tell you what, Mac, and that was good. Hey, you've seen enough. You've seen enough youth baseball. There's a lot of good advice and information there that hopefully parents will listen to from Dr. Key.
Well, that's the key, the parents. It still boils down to the parents, and it's okay to say no. You know, no one gives a rat's behind how you do in the monster bash or the hit fest or whatever when you're 12, 13 years old. But, you know, in the big leagues now you get paid to throw the crap out of it and all the analytics with spin rates and this and that. That's how you're getting ahead, velocity and spin. And, man, that's a lot of torque on the arm.
We have Mike McFarland on the line. And Royals will be hosting the Baltimore Orioles now for a big weekend series. One roster move yesterday, and we kind of knew this was coming because Michael Massey was pulled from his game, and it's time for him to come back. He's been swinging a hot bat down at AAA, but the guy that's going to lose his spot is Nick Lofton because he was already sent down. And I tell you, I mean, 13 games, 35 plate appearances. He hit .276 with a .371 on base and drove in six runs. And so he held his own and clearly showed that he, at least in that short sample size, belongs. And you know what? And honestly, it's kind of unfair. A guy with a .371 on base did his job. Now he gets sent down. But number one, that's a good statement on the depth that at least the Royals have in the infield. And number two, that it shows what they think of Michael Massey, that he's going to come up here and be an upgrade, hopefully at second base. What were your impressions of Nick Lofton, and then what are your expectations for Michael Massey?
Well, the pressure on Nick Lofton to produce, knowing exactly what the thought process of the front office was, that as soon as Massey was ready, I mean, it was one of those things, a foregone conclusion that he was going to come up. And Massey went down and absolutely tore it up. And Nick Lofton more than held his own. I was impressed on his command around the strike zone and how, you know, was able to find barrels consistently. He looked okay in the box, wasn't overwhelmed by any stretch, and was more than serviceable filling in. The second part of it is, someone else goes down, you're probably going to be the first one back up, just because of the fact that the way you went about your business with the pressure of trying to show him that you could be a big leaguer, and he did. So, you know, great sign. You know, you got Drew Waters down in the minor leagues doing the same thing, guys swinging the bats well. So, look, there's some pretty decent depth down there as far as position players go to help cover, you know, everything if something does go wrong on the big league level.
You mentioned Drew Waters, and Annie Rogers wrote about him at MLB.com. He's got an .883 OPS with five doubles and nine ribbies, but he still has a 28% strikeout rate. How concerned are you about that?
Well, the swing and miss rate, I think, is, you know, the alluding to that. And if you're swinging and missing at AAA stuff, you know, the filth factor, I guess you could say, is exponential at the big league level. So it's going to take a little bit more time for him to start controlling the strike zone down there, but he can show that he can barrel up a mistake and has power in the bat and everything else and does a good job in the outfield. But, I think the fact that Massey came up with just starting off extremely hot, patient, everything that goes with it, and pretty good second baseman as well. You're going to give him his shot first and let Drew Waters work on the command of the zone and cut down on that swing and miss rate.
And the offense can use a little shot in the arm right now, Mac, as well as the teams playing. They have kind of cooled off outside of Vinny Pasquantino. What are you seeing offensively from the team right now in general?
Well, Michael Garcia and MJ seems to be getting back into a little bit of muscle and tension in his swing, but you're going to have those ebb and flows all along the way. I think the offense gets really scary if one of those other guys gets going, because Salvi's going to be Salvi, but seeing Vinny come back and being the beast that he is, protecting Junior, you got a strong lineup. You know, throw in the fact that they've played the White Sox 200 times already at the start of the year. Things are going to get real interesting here. You know, when you got the Orioles coming into town, they're starting to find their groove a little bit. So they got some tough games coming up. We'll really get a good feel here after this weekend, moving into next week, on where this team is offensively.
All right, so here are the Orioles and Alec Marsh. Up first for the Royals starting pitchers. What do we need to see from Marsh? What does he have to do to be successful against a very good Orioles lineup?
Well, you got to stay down in the zone. I mean, they have some guys that are on the struggle bus, too. You know, Rutschman's not really where he wants to be, and Gunner's not there, and Jackson Holliday's still trying to find his way at the big league level. something that he has never done in his entire life, the struggle. You just want him to struggle for three more days and get him the heck out of town before they get hot. But the ability to change speeds with the change up, the breaking ball, to, you know, just accentuate the ability to locate his fastball. I'd say his location ability has been very good this year. He's miffed when he wants to, getting a lot of chases on some pitches. When you throw a lot of strikes, you get the hitters more aggressive, and that's when you can expand that strike zone, get them off balance. He's one of those guys that I always said it's a fun game to call behind the plate when you have him out there and all his stuff is working, because you can get into some brains there and get them thinking opposite and just enough fastball to beat them, and then they're really screwed up in the head as far as their approach goes. So I've been impressed with his ability to locate on a consistent basis with three quality pitches.
Hey, location, Mac. That's just kind of what we heard Dr. Key talking about. It's a lost art.
Velo, light up that gun. Give you those running crow hop starts throwing in January, you know, as hard as you can against the wall, and then post it on Twitter.
You think guys like Seth Lugo can, with the success he's having, if that continues, could change some of that thinking? Is there any chance of that thinking changing and guys going back to valuing command a little bit more?
I don't know. Ask Greg Maddux, but, you know, nowadays everyone goes, oh, Greg Maddux only threw 89 miles an hour. And that damn ball Greg Maddux used to throw would move 2 feet. And he didn't try and hump up on one pitch his entire career. You know, as a catcher when I was playing, you always look for location over velocity. If you can locate, depending on the strike zone of an umpire on any given day, locate and change speeds with the two extremes. Be able to throw that change up when you want to for a strike and locate your fastball, you're just fine. But again, with all these things that are going on with the numbers and you know, for hitters, launch angle, for pitchers, spin rate, all these things that they're throwing in there to make it a more fan-friendly experience, I guarantee you 99% of the baseball fan doesn't know what the hell the spin rate is and anything else. Oh, it's rotational. Well, yeah, but again, we get back to give me someone, Kevin Apier, 91 miles an hour, movement on his fastball, filthy breaking ball, those type of guys that aren't up there trying to throw 97, 98, because big leaguers at that level can spin on a bullet right now, and I don't care how hard you throw, if you leave it on the plate, they're going to touch it and generally let that velocity do the work for you and the ball jump.
My final question, I mean, look, we see it all the time, but how much of a stud is Salvi? Where we see it looks like he has this bad injury and we're like, oh no, I hope he's only out a couple of weeks. I hope it's not going to be a long time. And then like 2 days later, he's hitting a game-winning home run and looking like nothing's wrong. Yes, he's over 250 home runs, World Series MVP, multiple Golden Glove awards. He's done all these Silver Slugger awards. He's done it all. But how freaking tough is this man?
He's old school. I mean, simply put, I can play. He wanted to play the next day. I saw that play, and again, let's just talk about the thickness, I guess you can say, of Salvi's lower half. He damn near did the split, and the fact that something still held together in there and didn't allow it to be as bad as it looked, pretty impressive. But when you're a catcher, you want to play. I mean, not to say that every other position isn't the same, but as a catcher, you have two games, your offensive side and your defensive side. And most guys take pride and you get much more satisfaction out of, quote, calling a good game and just the rush you get when, like we talked about, you can log into some guy's cerebellum and get him flailing and thinking and stepping in and out of the box and taking him out of his game. You get just as much satisfaction as that as you do out of getting hits. His swing's going to be fine. He's going to run into some again this year. But his health, look, he's strong, and he wants to play. That's the biggest thing. And I do like the fact that he's learned another position, that he can get that day off but still keep his bat in the lineup.
Did you happen to notice the location of the pitch on the home run he hit in game one of the doubleheader the other day, 2 days ago?
Yeah, well, when Salvi's going good, he can scoop a ball off the ground. He can tomahawk a ball chest high. When he's seeing it well, it doesn't matter. He's going to let those hands work. And thing is, you never see him really muscle up trying to go for the pump. He's just letting the bat head do the work. But when he's going well, the ball stays, the barrel stays through the zone extremely well, and his balance is outstanding.
Mac, always good talking to you. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, boys. Have a good weekend.
That is Mike McFarland. Boy, if you're a baseball fan, that was a good hour for once.
Man.
You know, usually I think that hour, you know, was good and then it sucked. Not generally sucked, like an all-encompassing suck.
Yeah.
But
this one not a specific type of suck.
There was no suck in this last hour. I don't know what to do.
There wasn't a specific suck. There wasn't a general suck.
I feel like I should leave the show now, but we have another hour now. You know what? Tim Grunhard won't let us down. Stan Weber was good. All the guests have been way better than us. I can promise you that. That's enough of fill time before Jake finds the clip. I'll go to break.